So good morning, everybody. Thank you for being present today of all days. Please stand and face the flag. I think we were going to put a flag up on
Here
the,
it comes.
here we go.
Okay. All right.
So we'll stand, and I ask that you all renew a promise not to forget what happened today. So I pledge allegiance
Allegiance to the
to the
flag
flag
of the
United States
States
of America,
of America,
and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
We wanted to see everyone's stomachs, so.
Years.
20 years, I know. All right. So we'll come back to public comment. So I believe the first item is the consent calendar. Does anyone wish to remove, discuss any of the items on the consent calendar?
Do you want a roll call?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Please do the roll call.
Bill Cover?
Here.
Jeff Jones?
Here.
Bruce Utter?
Here.
Andy Rich?
Here.
Sharon Tobias?
Here.
Dan Crosby?
Here.
John Dashner? All right. And with us, we have Andrew Ramos and Tyler Mayo, General Manager, Lee Schmeeds, Tom Schneider, and myself, Kathy Powell.
And I also Craig. Wanted to mention Craig Lutz is on. Also, yes. I wanted to welcome Craig. He joined the Long Range Planning Committee within the last month or two. And so welcome, Craig.
Yep, thanks, Tom. I had a chance to stick my head in the office the other day and meet someone face to face, so it was good. But
great.
Welcome, Craig. Thank you so much for volunteering.
Yeah, my pleasure. I think.
Oh, it's lots of fun.
It is lots of fun.
It's a good group. So
I sense that.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. So back. So the consent calendar. Does anyone wish to discuss any item on the consent calendar?
This is Dan. I have a couple questions, comments on the financials I want to discuss.
Okay. So what about the other two items? Are there
minutes work?
So, minutes are, yeah. Dan, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
I'm good with the other two items.
Okay. So, do we need to make? Can we make a motion to approve the meeting minutes and the what is it? The consumption rates.
Water production, consumption,
water
and usage.
Production. And move the finances for discussion.
Sharon, that's the proper procedure. Yes.
Okay, so I need a motion to do
so
that.
Moved.
Who was that?
Andy.
Who moved? Andy? All right.
Seconded by Dan.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, so the financials.
So on page 4 of the packet, there's two line items for donated systems. What is the donated systems? Can you refresh my memory?
That donated system happened like back in 1969 when okay. CCWD did donate a portion of their system that they had to us.
Okay.
I'm not sure which page that's on.
Page 4.
Page 4, the one.
I saw it.
Sorry,
balance sheet.
Financial sheet, yeah.
Yeah, balance sheet, Kathy.
Okay.
There it is.
It was under equity.
Yeah, so.
And under fixed assets.
But why are the numbers different? Under assets, you show 407,649, and under equity, we show 411,467. Is there a reason that the donated system value is different for those two line items?
That's a very good question, and I do not know the answer. I'll have to talk to the CPA about that.
Okay.
Good call.
The other question was we bought the office building last year as part of the closeout for the loan.
Yes.
And where is that shown as fixed assets?
Buildings and structure.
Okay. So we added that last year. I'm sorry. I missed that one.
Yes.
Okay. And then on the next page, page 5.
Okay.
There is like 5 or 6 items down. There's the Blue Lake Springs connection fee and restricted connection fee.
Yes.
For some reason, it's showing a difference as 0. And I mean, if you do the math, the difference isn't 0. I don't know why they're being shown as 0. See that over on the left?
Yeah. Okay, that's a
right here
Excel flaw. Thank you. Gosh. Thank you again.
And then one other minor comment. The note down. This is nitpicking. I shouldn't say it, but anyway.
That's right. It's perfect.
The note down at the bottom where we talk about removal USDA repayment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be 74%. That's what you show up at the table. And if you do the math, it's 74%, not
64. Oh, gosh.
I'll have to do that again because I know we all came up with 64. So I will look into that as well.
Maybe I did something wrong.
No? Well, I can check and get it right.
All right. And with that, I don't have no other comments about the finances.
So do we need to approve the financials with
those
comments?
Yes, a motion with those changes.
Okay.
I motion that we approve the financials with the changes so commented. This is Dan.
I can second.
Is that Bruce?
Yeah, that was Bruce.
Thank you. It's hard not being in the same room. I hear a voice and I don't know where on the screen it came from. So, all right. Thank you so much. Has our public person arrived?
Has not.
Yeah. I think so. I let him in.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. I see someone. So next on our agenda is a public comment. And I believe we had a member of the public who wanted to speak to the board. Mr. Hamilton.
Hush. Muted, maybe.
Am I?
See if he's muted, Kathy.
John, yeah. Hamilton, can you hear us?
Let's see. John? He's not muted.
Are we muted, though? He can't hear us.
I can hear you.
John?
Perhaps someone could send him a chat.
There he is.
He can't hear us.
I can see him, but I can't hear.
I think one of the hosts has to send him a chat.
Okay, got it.
Are you doing it, Kathy?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
can you guys hear me? I switched speakers.
There yeah, you really well.
Okay. So. Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Hamilton, can you hear us? Oh,
I need to get the speakers to work. Can't hear. Okay.
That makes sense.
Do you want him to call in on his cell phone if he can't get it to work?
Yeah, that would be good. It might save him some time.
All right, come on.
Oh, we hear you now.
Can you hear us?
Okay. I don't know.
Hey.
There we go.
I apologize. I unplugged everything and came over to the office and came back and, well, nothing worked. So, all right. I didn't hear anything until right now. Am I intruding?
You are not intruding. This is a public comment period. And we'd like to welcome you to the meeting.
Well, thank you very much. In essence, the premise is your property on Dunbar. I have the property that's closest to the logging museum from the one on Dunbar. And the whole idea is that I've been doing the pine tree for 16 years now. And we have something's kind of developed over the last year that I think could have an opportunity to bring over the next 5 years, say 50 jobs to the Arnold area. Sounds kind of crazy, but I think it could happen. So in essence, but I also know that you guys have, what is it, two wells that are drilled on that property that you guys invested to do? Is there at least two?
Yes.
Okay. And the idea I was thinking of, and it's kind of bubbled up in the fact that what the pitch would be is that we know that for your ratepayers and stakeholders, having access to that stuff is vitally important to you. And one is, I thought, you know what, we need, if there's some way to where we could work out something where we purchase the property, but you still maintain the rights to the wells. And because I was trying to think look, we've been doing the news for a lot of years. We're still not financially well off, but we can do this. And also with what we've got going forward, we're going to need at least space that we could rely on to possibly grow. The pitch is we've been doing the pine tree, but over the past couple of years, we've been collecting news website domain names. Right now we have 106 of them. We have 23 sites that are live right now. Three sites, the pinetree.net, Lakeside News and the Lake Tahoe market, and the Daily Tide, which covers Santa Cruz and the Monterey markets, are actually number one in their markets right now. And the pine tree, while not perfect in many ways, it's the highest traffic website, not only for Calaveras and Tuolumne and Amador County, but in the region. You know, we get more traffic than, say, the Stockton Record and stuff like that. Our best month for the pine tree was over 16 million page views. And the idea is to build a little media campus that we could use as a newsroom for possibly 25 or 30 websites. So the idea is we would have somebody on premise there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, doing news stuff. And one of the reasons how this developed is we started working on that property over there. And as you know, that section with the apartments and everything, it becomes kind of a magnet for people. We removed one homeless camp an old one that had been on the parcel that I have. There was one day that I was working on the parcel there, and there was literally somebody on your parcel watching me work. And, you know, and I can only imagine you guys internally, you have a water district to run and stuff like that. But in a weird way, those parcels from, you know, there down to, they become an attractive nuisance. And I think that, you know, to make them work and to make them profitable, somebody's going to have to move on there and just be there, play self-defense, actively manage those parcels. And I was thinking, you know what, I bet, you know, there might be an opportunity for the water district. If they could maintain the access to the investments they had in those wells, we take over ownership, use of the parcels and management, but also carve out the where if, because we're in a drought year right now and everything else, that if they needed access to those wells, that could be part of the deed piece. So that was my thought. And I don't know where you guys are, but that was kind of the reason I'm here.
Hey, John. Yeah, this is Bill Cover. I'm I guess I've been here 3 years, but I'm not familiar with your background. Are you speaking to us representing a corporation, or are you speaking as just a public person, and are you a shareholder
in
the company? Like, who are you?
My name is John Hamilton. My background is running the Pine Tree here locally for 16 years, but I also have an LLC. I have a couple other family members involved in it, and also have an investor we've lined up that if we can get the first round, if we can prove some traction in some markets beyond the Pine Tree, they basically said that, you know, they will allow us to expand in, they will back us in development. So yes, I'm an individual here in town in Arnold, but I'm also part of an LLC which actually owns this parcel and hasn't given us a ton of money, but we can enough to grow the parcel. So yes, it would be, I'm speaking for Village Media LLC legally.
Thank you. That helps.
Does anybody else have any questions for Mr. Hamilton? So I believe, the board can discuss this.
Yeah.
Offline, and we can get back to you.
I have some documentation. I can show what we'd like to do there. I think if you're looking at structuring something, we could do a nominal down payment now. If we can prove that our format will work, we could, the parcel we have on Dunbar, roll that into a larger, so we can pay the whole thing off, combine the parcel owner within a 2-year period. So what we're looking at is if we can get in it, nominal down payment, work on it, and then you would have a balloon out in 2 years, but we'd still maintain, you would still maintain rights to the wells.
So John, you have documents with a specific proposal for the board to consider.
And also some,
you're specifically written down what you're asking for so we can study it.
Well, I don't know exactly what your framework. This may not be a parcel that you want to sell. Then the other one is price, what you would want for it, but still maintaining legal access to the wells if you needed them. So there's a couple different ways that I don't know how to structure it to put it in. But if I get a little bit of feedback from and say, okay, then yeah, I can write something. I can write something up, and so you'd have some documents to actually, to put it into words. I had some stuff today that I was going to show off in person to why I think this might work, but that's an entirely separate deal.
Right. But I think we need something in writing. So
sure.
We know exactly what we're, I'm not familiar with, your project. So I don't know how the other board members, so I kind of need some background and
understood.
Scope how we play into your plan. So, because it's hard to do something verbally here. So
understood. What I guess the question is what plans did you have for that parcel? What were your plans going forward?
Our plans are to eventually develop the wells.
Okay.
And, we plan to keep the parcel as far as I'm aware, but that is up to the board and the company. Tyler, do you have any?
No, you're exactly right. We plan on developing the wells. It's been a plan for the last 7 years. It just has never come to light yet. So,
yeah.
Right. Understood. And that's where I thought the proposal would be into where, to work out something to where we basically take over management of those, that block of land from your parcel all the way to the logging museum. but you would still have the legal right to develop those wells if you need to. And so that, I think, would be the kicker. And then, so I don't know what pricing it'd be. So I guess the only feedback would say, okay, yeah, we'll sell the land, but we need the UC. So I don't know how to, I guess a little bit of feedback on you say, okay, on how to structure it. Because I think, because I know you have a pretty serious investment in those wells. You know, you paid to have that infrastructure put in. So the idea would be to where, you know, it, you would still maintain that, but what's the value of use of the actual land itself? So.
Yeah, but John, you got to, the reason I want something in writing is it's more complicated than just having the rights to the wells. You have to, whatever you use that land for, it can't impact the wells or the quality of the water. Understood. And that would be a decision that we would want to make independently and not depend on your corporation to make. So that's why I think it's, if you write down exactly as much detail as you can share without, I mean, we'd have to talk to Andrew whether or not we need a confidentiality agreement or not to look at it. So, I don't know enough to give you any feedback.
All right. The 32nd elevator pin, what we want to do with the project is in essence, create a little media campus from that there. So, you know, it's not, we don't have an intensive development project. For example, let's say we're running 25 news websites from there. For the Pine Tree, we actually produce 20 hours of live content where we're streaming every week in addition to doing the news articles. The idea would be on that parcel, there may be three or four little outbuildings where somebody's actively doing a newscast from those parcels. The idea is not a heavy use of the parcels from an industrial perspective, but kind of like a little tech media campus where you have it's a media park with some smaller buildings interspersed through it, but there's not going to be, we don't have like an idea for one big 10,000 square foot building, you know, is an intense development. That's not the plan. So that's basically it.
Okay.
I can write something up.
Sure. Yeah. You can write something. If you could write something up and probably submit it electronically for us to look at, since we're all not physically at the water company.
Yeah.
That would be great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you guys have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so next on the agenda is the
RPC.
Yeah, the LRPC.
Alrighty. I guess the long range planning committee section starts on page 14 with the cover sheet. First of all, I just want to mention that a lot of this data that was compiled into these charts was provided by Lee and Tyler, and Jeff Jones provided some of it. So it was a lot of information that we hadn't looked at it from that viewpoint before, but it was a lot of good information that provides us some different perspectives that we hadn't seen before. So it's good to get it out there so everyone can look at it. And over the next month or so, we can have further discussions on it with the long range planning committee and see how different parts of this might come into play as we work toward our rate structure for next year and beyond. So, with that, if you go to page 15, just a overview of the reserves budget status and any updates. As of July, our reserve budget still stood at about $1.35 million. We have those 24 USDA tasks, including borough court, that weren't completed during the project. What's happened over the last month or so is, Tyler's been trying to receive more firm quotes from Mazingo, it turns out that they're not able to provide those quotes because suppliers are out of stock on the parts. And without those prices on parts, they're unable to provide us an overall quote. And we're not sure exactly when the parts might be available. So that's indefinite as far as having any work done on those tasks. Same with item number two, we were going to look into separate parts quotes to see if we could get that moving through getting bids directly to us. But same reason as above, no suppliers are responding. As far as the number three, the proposal for additional capacity with CCWD, that has not gone any further than the last time we discussed this. There has not been any response from Michael Minkler or CCWD on any terms or cost of what that increased capacity would be. Recently their office was closed due to COVID. So you're on the wrong page there. Oh, no, you aren't. I'm sorry. The good news is if you look at our usage levels, they are down from 2020 quite a bit. You can see there May down 23%, June down 18%, and July down 21%. August, once we got the latest data, August was down, I think, 38%. So if you look at the total decrease for the year, it's about 17%. If you go all the way from January. So,
Tom, a quick question for you. Are these numbers CCWD comparative numbers, or are they overall all Blue Lake Springs?
They're overall. If we take the usage chart that is part of the package, I took the total usage from 2020 to 2021. So I guess with Tyler's help, we can probably get more detail and narrow it down to the CCWD side of things.
Do we know how many days we went over the CCWD allotment?
Tyler does.
Right now, we went over 2 days, and one of the days was the day we exercised the pump station, which was, it's basically mandatory for us to do about every once a month. That way the water doesn't get too old that's sitting in that pipe. But we went over 2 days. One was exactly 100 and one 122. And that was the day we ran the pump, was the 122.
Okay. And our allotment's 100?
Yep. Our allotment is 100.
Okay. Thank you.
The next item, the asset management plan database updates. I met with Lee and Tyler last week, I believe, and Tyler provided me with the updates that him and Billy went through. And so those, they updated based on any replacements that occurred that weren't reflected on our initial input, and also basically prioritize the assets. They identified items on there that weren't critical and shouldn't be on there, and others that were overstated as far as the cost goes. So I've got that data now. I'm in the process of incorporating those dollar amounts and, you know, deletions and additions into the database so that we can recalculate our time phase costs over the next several years. And so I should be able to get that update done within the next couple weeks here. Probably not. I think I've mentioned to several people, my calendar is going to be really booked up through the end of the month. So it'll probably be sometime out in October. We'll also keep the other potential reserve concerns. One was the major SCADA issues that we've been incurring over the year. Keep those under review. And based on all that, hopefully we're getting closer to having enough updated data so that the multi-year cash flow analysis can be completed, showing our cash flow over the next 3 to 5 years. So based on those items above, especially on the all the USDA projects that were not completed, it's highly unlikely that we will request any access to our reserves budget this year. Also, the reserves budget is estimated to increase over $300K by the end of the year. We actually started in our rates collecting payments from shareholders for the USDA loan repayment. As you know, the schedule slipped in the project, so we were collecting those funds last year, and our first payment isn't due until January of 2022. So we've collected an excess in funds there that we can apply to our reserves budget. Any questions? So at the end of the year, I'm estimating about 1.6 in reserves.
I think Craig had a question.
Yeah, just a background question. I'm just not familiar with what SCADA is, if that's even how you pronounce it, just for my knowledge. What is that issue?
SCADA is the remote. It's our able to remotely control the wells, the treatment plant, the pump stations, monitor the tanks, which all used to be done with radios that now is cheaper radio signals. And now the SCADA is a lot better item. But when we purchased the SCADA, we purchased it through Aqua Sierra. And Aqua Sierra is the sole proprietor to being able to work on data flow systems. So they kind of have us pinned under their thumb with being able to get help when we need help with our systems, as well as we've been spending in excess of $10,000 to $15,000 a year just to maintain the system. That shouldn't be. That's what our major issues are. And then when we're calling to get help, the help isn't arriving. We're getting delayed when we need the actual tech support from them.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yep.
I have a question about reserves. What assets are we reserving against? For instance, I can see the fixed assets, but surely you don't reserve for land, the value of the land. So where can I see the number of the total assets that we're reserving against?
I could get him that information. I'll send him our asset management plan.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any more questions on that page?
Yeah, Tom, this is Andy. So what is the delta on the excess of USDA funds at the end of the year?
I believe it's 322K, right around there.
Okay.
Lee, speak up if I'm not correct there.
I see what you're saying, and I see why you're using that number. We just did a projected year end, and it wasn't that high. It was more. Okay. It was closer to 200,000.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Next page. So, Lee and Tyler had compiled information on usage broken down by local versus part-time shareholders. And so I used the data that they provided and put it into this summary level chart. There's a couple charts here. You can see that each section there is our two-month billing cycles. So January, February, and March, April are showing on this page. The top portion there shows all the usage based on their meter readings for all the residents that were over the bi-monthly 700 cubic foot usage level. And so you can see for January, February, the residents that were over the 700 cubic foot, about 37% of those were local and 63% of them were part-time. If you look at March, April, it's basically the same. The total counts changed, but the percentages pretty much stayed the same. In January, February, the part-time average usage was a little higher than the locals. But then you get out into March and April, and the locals are at 749 and part-timers are at 703. So the locals were higher. Right down below each of those, it shows. Hello?
Yeah, Tom, I have a question.
Okay.
And I just want to, the local,
uh-huh.
It means that they use a PO box. That's the only thing we're using, or do we actually go in and make sure these people are full-time people?
Used Arnold addresses.
But that doesn't actually mean they're full-time people. It just means that they use an Arnold address to get their bill.
That's the only way we had to distinguish locals from part-timers. Okay. And with that being said, Bob McGinnis has an Arnold address, but mm-hmm. we didn't use him. So there was a little bit of knowledge of who is in the system, as well as going strictly by PO boxes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Seems a little counterintuitive that the part-timers are using more water than the full-timers. Is there a reason? Do we know why that would be?
There's 1,500 part-timers and 200 full-timers.
It's not per capita usage. It's just the total percentage, and most people are part-time, so that's going to be skewed towards that.
So let me make sure I understand. So a local person is defined as a PO box, unless you have more knowledge of that person.
Correct.
So am I reading this correctly, Tom? If I look at the January, February meter readings and go down to, the 10,372, which I guess really, I'm not sure I understand that a part-timer used that much water?
Yes.
Yes, over that two-month period.
Do we know who that person is? What are they doing?
It's outdoor water.
You don't know if it's a part-timer. I mean, they could have been up here full-time for those 2 months, but they have a PO box.
He's a part-timer. We have one person that's out on Unit 13 that uses an astronomical amount of water. The 10,000 is actually fairly low. He was up to 30,000 this last one. So, we've contacted him. We've talked to him about what he's using, and it's through an irrigation system. He has a massive house that covers over two or three lots, and his irrigation goes that far front and back.
Wow.
If you ever take a drive out to Unit 13, go to Millbar Court, and you won't miss the house I'm talking about.
Hmm.
Okay. So does he pay for each lot, or did we give him a benefit of not paying for each lot if he's on three lots?
He pays for all of his lots. He pays for all of his water usage. He has no problem paying.
So well, I mean, I'd like to have his job, but
yeah. It's interesting to note that at least at some of those higher numbers, the part-time people are using more water than local.
Mm-hmm.
I think the sample sizes on the number of locals are pretty small in some cases, so I think it's just going to get skewed by that, Andy.
Yeah, that does come into effect.
Well, it is, you know, it is. They are small numbers of owners, but it's kind of interesting to note that part-timers, at least at those levels, are using much more water than local. But anyway, tough said.
Yeah. Yeah, down below that section we've been talking about, you can see the shareholders, that the number of shareholders below the 700 cubic foot allotment, and those with zero consumption. So it was 87% total under the allotment for January, February, and 83% under in March, April. And you can see the takeaways down at the bottom. For both January and February, March, April, users over the 700 cubic feet, approximately 37% are locals and 63% are part-timers. I won't go through those. Everybody can see what they say, but you can see that for January, February, the part-timers were greater than the locals, and March, April, the locals were 7% greater than the part-timers. If no questions, we can go to the next page, which is basically the exact same thing, but just out in the May, June, and July, August timeframe. So you know, one thing, I won't go into all the details, but you can see the percentage of locals versus part-timers again that are over 700 in each of the two different billing cycles there. One thing I did notice was in summer months, it appears as though the local percent, you know, once we get out to the May, June, July, August timeframe, the local percent dropped and part-time percent increased. So I think that's just a sign of more part-timers up here during the summer months.
It's also a sign of landscape usage, outdoor right. watering.
Right. So the number percentage of shareholders under the 700 cubic feet for May, June was 81% and 77% for July, August. And
while it comes to mind, I don't know that this necessarily fits for discussion here, but I was made aware recently that one of the local arborists, Nate Brenner, has been recommending to people in Blue Lake Springs, because of the bark beetle, that they water their trees. So I don't know whether there's a need to reach out to some of these arborists and do a little bit of educating on the thou shall not water trees philosophy that we have.
Yeah, I remember last time that was occurring, we had specific information that we made available to shareholders that told them, you know, the basic truths about how all that works. So it might be good to pass that out again somehow.
I've seen it mentioned a couple times on Nextdoor chains. You know, I've never seen a lot of dialogue on it, but I always cringe when I see it.
Yeah, we can add something in the bubbler about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also because of the fire situation, you know, there may be a propensity for people to, you know, do more watering of their natural landscape just to keep it, you know, somewhat less, to keep it more fireproof, I guess would be the other way to say it.
Don't be so generous with the term arbor. Tree guys that do tree work are not voluntarily arborists, and that definitely applies to Nate Brenner.
Well, Nate is a licensed arborist.
Arrest. I'm not going to comment further.
So down in the takeaways, I'll just mention that for May, June usage over 700 cubic feet, the average cubic foot per month for locals was 22% greater than part-timers. So even though the percent of locals that were over 700 cubic feet, those locals averaged 22% more than part-timers. And out in July, August, the locals averaged 28% more than locals.
Why is that? I find that surprising. That's all.
Yeah. I'm,
I mean, I think the idea of the post office box dividing people is something I would have done, right? But it may not be the best way to do this to determine who's up here. And it may be better to try to do some type of survey or something that we can send to the stockholders about, you know, for our long-term planning. We need to know, like, how many days are you here or something like that, and let them volunteer. I mean, we'd have to keep it confidential, but because it doesn't make a lot of sense.
We did do that about 7 years ago.
Yeah, we didn't get very much response back. We spent a bunch of money sending out the letters and trying to get back some surveys from people, and we did not get the response we were looking for.
We targeted.
Okay, so that might not work. Yeah, it might not work. You're right.
We targeted a number of people that we put meters on their houses and asked them the questions, and some of them were really good. Were every 5 days a year or 5 days a month. This month is what we were there. And what we actually found was that even if they were full time, they still weren't there 30 days a month because they were still traveling. They were still doing other things, going to visit their kids or whatever, that it was just a very, and that was about the time that we got rid of the part-time full-time thing. I think originally we had in the billing full time, right? Because they assume they use. That's imagine trying to get 1,700 people to tell us how many.
So we know that we have about 10%, roughly 10% full timers. And we know Lee has the information as far as, you know, who has a PO box. She also has a detailed listing, you know, every shareholder, every lot, you know, with the person's name. So we could do a comparison of the PO boxes versus the person's name. And, you know, between, a few of us, we could probably go down that comparison of, you know, 170 to 200 people and make it, you know, if it's not as accurate as it could be right now, we could probably make it more accurate. Just with, you know, a few of us and who we all know, looking at those people, determine, and, you know, maybe reach out to a few of them if there are some on there that we don't know.
And I will tell you that the Water Masters have a pretty good handle on who's local and who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least so maybe, who's occupying homes.
Yeah. So maybe that's something we can look into, Lee and Tyler. I'd be happy to help.
Okay. I think that would be good. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess my only comment would be, again, I'm new here. I mean, it may take a lot of work to do that, and we may get a little bit finer numbers, but they're still not going to be perfect, and does it really matter to make the investment in there? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. If the investment of time is worth it, I can think of several cases where full-time people have moved out in the last 3 months and part-timers took over. So whatever number you come up with today is going to be wrong tomorrow.
Correct.
Right.
Unfortunately, with the turnover we have in Blue Lakes, that's going to be very true.
And I think if you did a survey, people are going to be biased towards thinking or asking the question because it's going to fake, you know, they're going to think about, they want to know because of rates, and you may not get honest answers anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I believe, you know, we're looking at this, you know, more of a summary level to see what messages come out of this that we might want to consider in our rate making strategies. So I think if you get down into too much of the details, you're probably overdoing it. Let's see if we move on to the next page. This was just a comparison of Blue Lake Springs usage versus the USGS consumption data. So you can see, you know, the overall January through December average usage levels for 2019 and 2020. And so if you look at our usage allotment, it's 350 cubic feet, which amounts to 86 gallons a day. If you took the average for 2019, that comes to 69 gallons a day. And the average usage for 2020 came to 62 gallons a day. So the overall average usage was less than the allotment level. As a comparison, if you look at water consumption information at usgs.gov, and this, we've presented this information, but it's been probably a year or a year and a half ago. But so for indoor use only, the consumption per day per person is about 60 to 70 gallons. This would equate to about 243 to 286 cubic feet per person per month. And most, I think our average household is, Tyler, did you say like 2.3? Somewhere around there as far as
for the census last time, it was something about that range, like a 2.3, 2.5.
Okay. So if, so based on this USGS information, two people would be in the 486 to 572 cubic foot range, which, as you can see from above, is quite a bit above our 350 cubic foot allotment. For indoor and outdoor use, the average is 80 to 90 gallons per day per person. And so you could see there that it would amount to 325 to 408 per person per month. For two people, 650 to 816 cubic feet. So quite a bit above our allotment. So just as we go forward, some discussion points that can be discussed, you know, is the average usage significantly less than the USGS due largely to the large percent of part-timers? I think that answer to that is probably yes, but that can be a discussion point with the long-range committee. Based on 2021 data for usage above 350 cubic feet per month that we saw on those prior charts, part-timers are averaging 803 for January through August, while locals are averaging 897. So the locals over that 8 month span are averaging about 12% greater than the part-timers. let's see, and 58% of locals are using more than the 350 cubic foot allotment, while only 14% of the part-timers are using greater than the allotment. And it's probably the 82% of users less than the 350 cubic feet, most of which are part-timers, that brings our total average usage well below the USGS levels. Any observations or comments there?
Those numbers are the same numbers that I've seen for the last, well, since 1988 was when we really started keeping records on what people were doing after that drought. And those numbers look exactly the same as they have for the last 20 plus years. So I think it's all accurate. It's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a point of reference, I live in Healdsburg in Sonoma County, and we're under severe drought restrictions because of the Russian River, we're up a Russian River, and our mandate from the local water company is 74 gallons per person per day. And that includes any outside watering you want to do, and you're not allowed to do your lawn at all. So that number out there kind of coincides. It's a little bit less than the USGA for US average, which I guess makes sense.
Nobody does it better than Sonoma County Water.
Or Healdsburg Water, which is a subset thereof. So,
yeah.
Beg to differ.
Okay, if we move on to the next page, this is so the next couple pages here, this will compare our rate structure. This page is a comparison to the local water agencies. Tyler provided this information, and so I summarized it into this chart. Different agencies' rate structures, some charge monthly, some charge bi-monthly, but I normalized it into a bi-monthly rate for all of them just to get a apples-to-apples comparison here. So you notice the note up there for our Blue Lake Springs bi-monthly rate, it includes our USDA loan charge. So our base is $98 and plus the $38.50 for USDA, each resident's portion of the loan, USDA loan payment. So the total is $136.50. I will mention, though, that if you look at the details of some of the other agencies, they also have debt service portions within their rate structure. Unless you get into a super detailed review of each agency, it's hard to separate those out. But this gives you a general idea of how our base and monthly consumption included in the base and usage rate over our base compares to all the local water agencies up here. You can see that some do have an allotment included in the base and others don't. Typically, if they it varies from agency to agency. You can see the dollar amount per cubic foot varies, and the allotment amount varies. But what I did is I took all this data and just gave a couple examples of what the total bi-monthly rate for the residents would be based on each of their rate structures. And you can see at our allotment amount of 700, the bi-monthly allotment amount of 700 cubic feet, we don't have a charge for the usage. So ours remains at $136.50. And based on each of the other agencies' rate structure, you can see what theirs amounts to. So just at our allotment level of 700 cubic feet, Calaveras County is their level is down about 9% from ours. Amador Water Agency, which it's very similar to ours. By the way, Andrew pointed out that they had a rate increase in September of this year, so those numbers changed from the initial input. But theirs ends up being very, very close to ours. Tuolumne, it's about 5% lower. City of Angels, about 14% lower. Calaveras Public Utility District, about 10% lower. And Union Pacific, about 2% lower. And the levels are similar. They change a little bit when you go up to the 1,300 cubic foot usage level. Anyway, it gives us a comparison of how ours measures up against local agencies.
Tom, this is Andrew. I was just going to note that, you know, most of these agencies have larger service areas than the water company. And so they can benefit from an economy of scale that the water company can't. So this actually, I think, is a comparison that, you know, sort of is in favor of the water company in that the rates are actually pretty close, despite not having the ability to take advantage of the same economy of scale.
Right.
Yeah, Tom, since you've been living and breathing these numbers, what is your takeaway?
My takeaway is that I think that our base rate with the allotment that we give our shareholders is at a very acceptable level. I think that the usage rates, if you compare them to other agencies, our usage rates are low, and probably need some discussion on what those usage rates should be.
Hey, Tom, just a quick question. I mean, it's a little bit backwards, but so all those numbers are residential rates, right? For like,
correct.
Okay. All right. And then the other question I have, Andrew mentioned something about our rate structures where we have constraints on what we can do, being the type of corporation we are. We can't charge more than
what the population.
Yeah. I think actually we don't have it. And Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, but we actually don't have as many constraints as a lot of other public agencies, based on the way our company's structured. However, there are overall guiding principles that should be followed in developing your rate structure and, keeping it in line with the cost of your water should be one of those factors that must be considered.
I think you put that perfectly. That's exactly right. I think the constraints are probably less than a public agency performing the same function, but the overall principle that the rates must reflect the cost of service to your shareholders is sort of the guiding principle that you have to apply, and that's what you come back to, and that's what Tom uses in preparing these proposed rate structures.
So if I remember, I guess I don't remember correctly, but I thought there was some discussion about at one of our meetings where if the people that use large amounts of water, that we would increase the rate to make it more, encourage people to conserve water that are using large and large amounts. And I thought it was brought up that we could only charge them what the cost was for that water. And that's when we discussed whether or not we should have two or three rate tiers. In other words, so I guess I misunderstood that conversation.
No, you're totally right. We can't go from our $1.60 and then say go to tier two and it's $5 per 100 cubic feet. We have to show justification for why that's $5 now. We just can't penalize people because they use the water.
Is our nearest neighbor CCWD? Are they in a different program than we are? Are they for profit? How do they get by with tiered rates?
Abide by the same rules.
You know, with that question, Lee and Tyler, it might be a good idea for us to talk to CCWD, Michael, or I don't know who the right person would be, but ask and I don't know if they would even answer this, but how they justify their different tier levels within their structure. You know, just to see what data they're using to determine, you know, $1.13 for tier one versus $1.62 for tier three, you know, how they came up with those various tier rate structures.
Yeah, I guess another thought that I have is how much is it costing us to provide water to the very high use customers? So if we didn't have a guy using 30,000 cubic feet, could we have much smaller storage facilities? Do we need all the wells? Do we need to purchase as much water from CCWD? So that one outlier is costing us money.
Right. So there are other factors that come into play in the overall rate structure. Besides the cost that it costs us to make our water and to purchase CCWD water, we also take into account the fact that the usage of water and the varying amounts of usage of water come into play in determining we determine how much of our costs are fixed, and there'll be some information coming up on that, but how much of our costs are fixed and how much are variable. So went through an exercise of updating that with Lee and Tyler, and so that'll be coming up in another chart. But you want to make sure that besides the cost of making the water or buying the water, you also take into account making sure that your usage rate structure is adequate to provide the revenue to meet your variable costs. So there'll be a little. Go ahead.
Sorry, Tom, it's Andrew. Could I just make a note? You know, to Bruce's question, because the water company has really only two sources of water, the incremental cost of serving those high users, for the water company at least, I don't think there's a big difference in terms of that incremental cost, whether somebody is using a minimal amount or a large amount. And I think this is something that Tom has tackled in the past and looking at the rate structure, whether there was some justified way of charging an increased rate or a penalty rate to those high users. And I think we ultimately determined that, you know, based on the system that we have, there really wasn't a good justification for doing that. In that, you know, somebody using a high amount is going to be charged, you know, the same rate as someone else. And that was the most justifiable.
Right. A lot of agencies have gotten themselves in trouble with lawsuits in trying to justify penalty rates or really high usage rates for the high users. And trying to justify that is very difficult and probably not worth going down that road.
Andrew, Andrew, how does Sonoma and Marin Municipal get by with their super high tier rates?
Well, they can show a compelling public interest, you know, or something like that. I guess Andrew will know more of the legal terms, but if you can show there's a compelling interest to prohibit overuse of water conservation, but I don't know if there's a utility commission that monitors the water rates for Contra Costa County or any of that stuff, or if they have a commission like they do for electricity, but I'm not sure.
And unfortunately, I don't know the answer for Sonoma or Marin. They're very unique systems, and the Russian River system is incredibly complicated. So I'm sure for both, they have justification in their rate structure because both are going to need to comply with Prop 218, maybe less so for Sonoma to the extent it's wholesaling. But I'm sure they have justification in their rate structure because they have multiple sources of water that they're using, whereas we essentially only have two, CCWD water and groundwater, which are essentially flat costs on a per acre foot basis.
Right, but our position is that we sell water only for residential purposes. So if somebody's using a significant amount of water, then the only thing I can think of is that if it's for a residential purpose, I'm not sure how much we can do. But I mean, if it's somehow crosses the line into some gray area of residential versus commercial, then, you know, we may have a position. But
we do have a different rate structure for the homeowners, HOA. So they're on a different rate structure than our residential rate structure. But they're the only commercial within Blue Lake Springs. So,
they rent their houses out. It's commercial, but if they do a bed and breakfast thing, but we can't regulate that much detail. Because there's still a big argument about whether by definition, it's commercial if you're renting it for profit, if it's not a long-term lease. But
well, if we can't figure out to the nth degree who full-timers are versus part-timers, I'm not sure how on earth we'd figure out who the VRBOs and other renter, you know, might be.
I agree, Andy.
Yeah,
you know, we could spend a lot of time, you know, trying to manage to the nth degree, but you know, 80% of the cost goes to you know, just providing water to you know, every household. You know, as Andrew said, the incremental cost to provide water above 350 cubic feet per month is really de minimis in the overall scheme of things.
Well, I mean, I think the only way not the only way, but, you know, unless we have like a complete water shortage, then but that would apply to all customers and not just, you know, we wouldn't be picking and choosing, you know, who we were going to limit the use.
Right.
Right. So the page that's showing now is the data and the different agencies that Jeff Jones had provided in an email after our last board meeting, or it might have been after our last long-range planning committee meeting. But it provides the same analysis as the local agency chart showed. One thing you'll notice here is all of these agencies have a zero cubic foot allotment. It's all based on usage from the very first cubic foot that they that the person uses. So, and you know, if you look, just another quick note out at the usage at 1,300 cubic feet in the far right column. If you compare ours at 146.10, you look down and there's three others that are as high or right around the same area or higher. So, you know, there's so many variables in each agency's rate structure that, you know, it's hard to determine exactly what causes it and, you know, what the right level is. But anyway, that's how those agencies compared to ours.
Well, my interpretation is looking at these numbers, Tom, is that we compare rather favorably across the board. You know, we're
right.
You know, we're not priced well under, you know, we seem to be pretty much spot on.
Yeah, I agree. If we move to the next couple pages here, page 21, I just wanted to throw in here, I can't remember if I showed this information in the past, but we kind of touched on it when I met with Tyler and Lee the other day, the fact that, you know, the cost of water and the rate structures for different agencies are going to vary. The cost of providing a gallon of water is not the same depending on, you know, which agency you're looking at. There are many factors that influence the price of water and cause the water rates to vary. As you can see in those charts, sometimes significantly, you might see some rates that are a lot higher in one agency than another, even among agencies that are fairly close by each other. The water rates reflect the full cost of providing service today and into the future, which means that you know, all the everyday costs, you know, all the debt service and all those things get put into the cost of providing water service and its unique to each system. It shows there the different things that can make the cost of water vary for water systems. Salaries, it says, is one of the largest. The cost of water treatment can also vary significantly from system to system, you know, depending on the quality of the treatment that we provide, and what we, you know, groundwater versus well water create a different cost of the water treatment. How much to what level of quality you treat your water will impact the cost of the water. Distribution, you know, up here in the mountains, our distribution covers going over, you know, ups and downs in the terrain, and others are just distributed through gravity. There's other non-revenue water, you know, if a system is old and has a lot of areas of repair and leaks, you know, those assets need to be eventually replaced. We've done a lot of this over the last few years here with our USDA project, but that left us with a debt service that we're repaying. So I think Andrew alluded to this a few minutes ago. How much each individual customer of a system has to pay depends on the total number of customers. Having fewer customers does not automatically mean lower total costs. in general, economies of scale exist within the water sector. So bottom line is the cost of water varies between each agency and sometimes quite a bit, even if the agencies are fairly close by each other. Any question on these couple pages? If we move to the next page there, 23, we've probably shown these charts multiple times over the last few years, but just provides a summary level review of our rate structure planning. So the water rates reflect the full cost of providing water service today and into the future, includes the full cost of producing, treating, storing, distributing, as well as the O&M costs, such as salaries, taxes, insurance, all those. It also includes debt service payments, capital improvements, and contributions to our financial reserve funds. So water rates are typically a combination of fixed and variable. Fixed charges are intended to cover debt service, capital costs, O&M, that costs that do not vary with the amount of water consumed. Variable cost component is the actual volumetric rate that is based on the amount of water used. A rate structure should collect fixed costs from fixed charges and variable costs from the volumetric rates to the extent practical. The right way to bill customers for water is to charge a fixed price in proportion to fixed costs and a variable price in proportion to variable costs. So at the bottom of this chart, it shows the exercise that Lee and Tyler went through. We reviewed it, made a few iterations, updates to it last week. Based on that analysis, and the 2021 forecast that we had, it shows that our fixed costs are 96.7, our variable costs are about 3.3%. The large accounts that fit into our variable costs are well four and pumping power for well four and pumping, and CCWD water costs over our minimum, and also chemicals. So those are some of the biggies that make up that $53,465, 3.3%. Any questions on that page? Next chart. Just more information on fixed, definition of fixed cost. We've talked about this many times, so there's nothing really new in there. Fixed costs, referred to as our base charges, are generally recovered through a fixed charge per billing period per customer and do not vary with consumption. Some utilities like us also include a usage allowance within the fixed base rate charge. Ours is the 350 cubic feet. Next page. Variable cost, expenses that change from month to month depending on how much water you purchase, pump, treat, and sell.
Tom, I'm sorry to interrupt you at this point, but I wanted to go back to the slide that shows your Lee and Tyler's analysis of fixed versus variable, the 96.7 versus 3.3% numbers.
Right.
How does that compare to
another one, Kathy?
How does that compare to what we have calculated in the past?
Very close. I think 2 years ago it was estimated at 3%. I think this year it was estimated at 2%, if I'm not mistaken. But it's right. It's been right around the 2 to 3% level for variable costs. So this year, I think a little more analysis was done by Tyler and Lee on the cost of our CCWD water. I can't remember if that information was passed out to everybody. I believe it at least went out to the long range committee from Tyler, but it showed we have a minimum cost of our CCWD water that we get charged. And so what was put into the variable cost here that might have been overlooked in prior years was the cost from CCWD purchase water that's above our minimum.
Yeah, but that based on the numbers that I think Tyler quoted earlier, there was one month where it was 102%. And then another month where I don't think it was 102, it was 102 cubic feet, wasn't it? Tyler, what was it? Where were those numbers you quoted? Where we went above the monthly allotment?
Where we went above the, I'm not following.
Andy, that's different than what I'm describing here. In our rate structure with CCWD, we have a minimum amount that we have to pay. It it's not that 100 cubic feet per day. It's different.
Yeah, that's our maximum. Our minimum is 41,000 a day we have to use. If we don't use it, we bought it anyway. So we try to make sure we use at least that 41. That's, I believe, is what Tom's getting at right there.
Right.
But I'm trying to figure out if that's the case, how does that impact the variable cost? Seems to me as though that's a fixed cost until you get to something over 100 cubic feet.
The 41 should be a fixed cost. Anything over that in between 41,000 and 100 should be variable because that could be the varying. Obviously, the 41 is given no matter what we use, whether we use 28 or we use 38, we still have to pay for 41. So 41 is definitely a fixed. Anything above that would be variable, I would have to say.
Well, I thought that cost was steady until you got to 100.
They have like a, what is it, a tier chart. So, I mean, anything over, I think it's 12,000 if we go back into it here. I think it's anything over 12,000, we pay $1.83 per 100 cubic feet. And yeah, anything between 6,000 and 12,000 is lower, but we don't normally fall under that rate just because we use far over that 12,000.
Tyler, it might be good to pass that, just pass out our latest bill from CCWD. Okay. To show. That pretty well displays how that tiered rate structure works with the amount of water we use or buy.
Yeah, I'll send that out to everybody.
Tyler?
Yeah.
Could Andy mean the 100,000 gallons per day that we cannot go over or we get penalized from CCWD? That's why they want to charge us more for the monies?
I know they're not charging us anymore if we go over that 100. It's still $1.83 per 100.
Correct. But the doing the $825,000 again if we go over continually the 100,000.
That's going to be a different matter that we'll have to deal with when that happens.
I just didn't know if that maybe was what Andy was thinking with the 100,000.
No, I was thinking the difference between 41 and 100, what is that real cost difference?
Okay.
I don't know. I might be trying to nitpick the question too much.
For July, I think it was $5,700, wasn't it? The variable piece of it? It's back. There's some detail back here a few pages later in the LPRC.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I do have a little bit more information that might help explain it coming up.
Let's see. So, yeah, if we go to page 26. Yeah. So this gives you an example of how we calculated the cost of our Blue Lake Springs water per cubic foot. So it shows the calculation that was done there that arrived at the $1.90 per 100 cubic feet. And then below that, you see the CCWD cost to purchase water. And this example, I believe, was from our July bill. But if my screen isn't showing that whole little section on CCWD, I don't know if it is on other people's screens, but you can see there the tier levels. So they have a different dollar amount per 100 cubic feet based on each one of those tiers, and it shows that how much we were charged, how much Blue Lake Springs was charged in each one of those tiers. So we get our actual use was $312,800, and our consumption charges. We had a base rate of $1,478.27, then consumption charges of $5,791. It should say total July charges down there were $7,270. So the minimum required per month is $180,480 cubic feet. And you can see there our actual use was $312,800. So everything above that minimum required amount per month is the variable amount. So you can see down at the bottom that the calculation that was used to arrive at the charges of purchasing water from CCWD, which came to the $1.85 per 100 cubic feet.
So you're saying that the water we buy from CCWD, anything above the minimum, you're considering as variable cost?
Right. We pay for that minimum amount regardless of how much water we use, even if it's less than that 180,480 cubic feet. Once you get over that 180,480, based on those tier levels showing there, you incur those additional costs for usage.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Okay. But the first 312,000 gallons that we get, we still are paying 115 for, right?
Say that again.
So we have a minimum of 300,000 per month, right?
180,480, right?
But we're still paying $1.15 per 100 cubic feet for that, right?
Yeah, sir.
I'm having
Could everybody put themselves on mute? He's not talking.
Yeah, his it was breaking up. I didn't hear everything he asked.
So we still pay the $1.15 per 100 cubic feet for the what's below the minimum, correct?
Well, we spent $1.15 per 100 cubic feet just for the first 500 cubic feet. Then it goes up to $1.20 for the next 2,500 cubic feet, and so on.
If I understand this correctly, if we use zero water from CCW, it looks to me like we'd pay $1,478 per month minimum. Is that right?
That's correct.
So anything above that, anything more than we pay for that, so the 14 is going to be the fixed cost in my mind, and then we get our bill at the end of the month, and anything above and beyond that minimum, by definition, is going to fall into the variable category. That's
correct.
Yeah. So then.
Okay.
But it all seems to stack up. Now, I assume that July is a high consumptive month as it relates to CCW water, given it's $6,000 and our total variable costs are 50 some thousand. A lot of months, it's got to be zero, I'm assuming, but. Or it's very low.
Right. And so for the estimate of variable charges or variable costs for CCWD purchased water, what Tyler did is he used data from last year, I believe, Tyler, right? For
yes.
The other month that we don't have data for yet.
Yes.
Any other questions on this chart? The next page. So hopefully over the next month, it'll be out in October for me, because I'm going to be kind of out of pocket for the rest of this month. But what I want to do is get a long range planning committee meeting scheduled out in October, so that we can talk through a lot of these areas in more detail and get everyone's feedback and opinions on these various items. I want to, first of all, make sure that our rate structure goals have not changed. Those rate structure goals we've been following for the last several years, and it all centers around being, a structure that's stable and predictable. It funds all of our costs, including reserves, promotes conservation, and you want to maintain as much simplicity as possible while still promoting fairness and equity. So we can talk through those and make sure those are still the points that we want to follow. Based on all the information that was provided in this packet, I want to get back with the committee and discuss, what we've seen here, give everyone a little more chance to digest it and see if anybody has any other ideas or questions that they've come up with. But review the local versus part-time, Blue Lake Springs versus USGS, comparison of rate structure between the different agencies, fixed and variable costs, and our costs to make and purchase water, and see what discussion develops there as we continue to develop the 2022 rate structure. Based on the information that was shown, our allotment of $350, it looks really generous when you compare it to our usage levels for the last couple years, and the fact that 80% of our residents are using less than that allotment. However, it looks low compared to the USGS consumption needs, as you can see there, which were our $350 versus 486 to 582 for two people with indoor use only. So We can talk more through that. And does lowering the base allotment penalize locals more than part-timers? That can be discussed. Discuss usage rates and structure. Our current is any usage over 350 excuse me, cubic feet per month is above our base allocation is charged at $1.60 per 100 cubic feet. So we can discuss that. We can discuss the cost of water, making it and purchasing it. We can discuss the one tier uniform rates versus multiple tier increasing block rates. Make sure everyone's on the same page as far as what we propose there. And also discuss implementing a usage rate structure that meets our variable cost. So on the next page, I just put together a quick example. That variable cost that you saw was estimated for this year, forecasted for this year, was showing at the bottom of the chart here, estimated at $53,465. So this chart shows that if we kept our base allocation at 350 cubic feet per month, what the usage rate structure would have to change to get our revenue per usage charges up to our variable cost amount. So you can see there, average, there's a column there, average month charge per resident in each of those different categories of usage levels. So if you look at, for example, the category there that's just above our base allotment, it's showing 351 to 700 per month. The amount of usage charges for that customer would be $2.86 as compared to $1.60 if on our current rate structure. The next category down 701 to 1400 cubic feet is 1430, which is compared to our current rate structure on the right there at $8. So you can see the difference that would in revenue that would be generated from that. And the usage over 1400 down near the bottom, 6292 per month would be the charge for that customer versus 3520 under our current rate structure. So this just gives an example of, you know, taking, not factoring in anything else, just what the rate, usage rate structure would need to be to bring us up to our variable expenses. Any questions on that? That's the last chart.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. That was very thorough and very enlightening. I have to budget my monthly rate now, so for my water use. But thank you, all joking aside, thank you so much to Jeff Jones, Lee Schmeeds, Tyler Mayo, and Tom Schneider. And Andy, I may have forgotten somebody else who worked on this packet and all the different things that went into it. I think there's a lot of great information presented. So thank you.
So excuse me.
This is Dan. I have a big picture question. So is the intent here is to look at our rates and see, should we increase our rates next year to put more money in the reserves for future work in the system? I mean, right now it looks like throughout the year, our rates and our costs are pretty well balanced. It seems like every year we put a little more in reserve. But what is the intent of raising the rates next year? Is it to build for the long-term plan to put money away for a long-term plan?
That definitely will come into play. As you know, as part of the rate structure development, we want to make sure that you know, if we're looking at the asset management plan and the other liabilities that could potentially impact our reserves over the next few years, you know, building that into our analysis is definitely part of the picture. But we want to make sure initially that the rate structure we develop is going to meet all of our costs. And by all of our costs, it also includes, you know, capital replacements and reserves.
Okay, because the structure we have now, it seems that we're not losing money every year. It's just maybe we're not putting enough away for reserves.
I think your reserves are pretty healthy, you know, given the you know, money that we've set aside from the USDA.
So it's not
like a huge number that we continue swirling away.
Although if we think we're going to have to pay $800,000 to CCW, I don't think that's right now very much baked into the reserves at this current point, is it?
Well, yeah, we definitely need to work through that one. That would be a big impact to our reserves, but we need to see how that transpires over. It looks like, you know, as far as this year goes, we're kind of beyond the point of being forced to increase those capacity and pay for that increased capacity. But it definitely needs to be kept in our long-term analysis. But Andy's right. You know, if you look at our reserves, and what they were, even, you know, prior to going into the USDA contract and, you know, making it all the way through that project over the last 3 years and seeing where we are today with our reserves, we're in a heck of a lot better shape than we ever were.
I agree.
But we also have liabilities out there that we need to deal with and stay on top of.
Yeah, I guess, you know, if we're going to change the rates, I just need to see a good reason why we need to change them. I mean, it seems right now, except for the reserves, the rates we have are good. So it doesn't seem to be broken. So what are we fixing if it's not broken?
Well, the one of the main reasons was we're looking at it was because that $1.60 has been in place ever since we only had a couple hundred meters in the ground. Now that we have everybody metered, we're just trying to check, make sure that $1.60 is going to be a proper number that people should be paying. Like you're saying, we don't want to be losing money, but we also don't want to be gouging and putting whole tons and tons into the reserves every year.
Okay.
But we definitely need to just take a look at it and see what's, if that $1.60 that's been in place since way before I worked here mm-hmm. is still a good number to be charging everybody per 100 cubic feet.
Yeah, I think, okay. You know, I agree with Dan, but for a different reason. And that is, you know, we have to be very, very careful, you know, on how we tweak, you know, the rate structure, if we tweak it at all. Because we don't want to end up in the same situation that the HOA is in, where, you know, members just absolutely, you know, loathe, you know, the spending that the HOA has been doing over the past several years. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, the water company's reputation amongst the community is neutral at worst, and very favorable at best, because, you know, we've put in a whole new system. We haven't increased the, you know, the rates significantly. And I think that, unless we have an unknown reserve issue, that we have to be very careful in how we tweak the numbers.
So I need to apologize. My statement before was just about the metered rate, because I, from looking at the data, it looks like the metered rate would go up based on usage. That's all. I didn't mean the base rate would increase by any significant amount. So.
Yeah, now that all the meters are in, and you know, we should continue to collect meter usage data for the rest of the year, but you know, we want to make sure that whatever structure we end up recommending, you know, for the for those the usage charges, you know, which are a variable cost, you know, match up with that the variable costs are met with our with whatever rate structure we develop for the usage portion of our rates.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm a firm believer in having a tiered system where, you know, the more you use, you pay that variable cost. So.
So my plan will be to contact the long range committee and, you know, get something established as far as a meeting goes in October. I'll be back down in Arizona, but we can definitely put together a Zoom meeting and go back through all these items and see what everybody thinks and, you know, talk through them and make some decisions and bring a recommendation back to the board.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And thank you for all the work you're doing.
You're welcome.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is unfinished business. And I believe we didn't have any. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. So new business. Correspondence?
None.
Okay. Monthly billing, invoices, receivables, and water shutoffs.
So this past billing, we billed out about $265,000. Just under $8,000 was metered water charges. People are paying. I've been sending out the 30-day notices and the past due notices, and that seems to be helping a lot, keeping our books more current, minus the 16 liens that we have on file. And I did have two liens paid off since the last meeting, totaling about $1,500.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to say that due to Kathy staying on top of all of this, I believe we're getting more monies in than we ever have before, with her being on top of everything. Phone calls, letters, all in advance, helping a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathy, for being so proactive.
Sure.
All right. Reportable items.
Well, going through the reportable items, we had talked about the additional projects in Tom's LRPC that we're unavailable to get parts. I went through four different plumbing suppliers and I found one flange out of the 19 or so that we need. So, yeah, we have a long way to go if we're going to gather the parts and then possibly hire somebody else or have us do the work. Mazingo had told me the same thing. And then the additional wholesale water, as Tom said as well, I've just been waiting on Michael. They had 8+ COVID cases in their office, and they basically came to a standstill.
As far as the cash flow, as I mentioned, you know, what based on some of this other data that we're getting, more information on. I'll probably be able to start filling that in throughout in the month of October. So we can move that date out probably till the end of October.
Okay.
Action item, if any.
I think we had a couple of action items.
We did.
Okay.
Lee, can you tell them, please?
Sure. So one of the action items would be to separate the CCWD water from the BLS for the usage levels, just to get a better feel of where we are and how we are, if the figures that we've given the board today are correct. We are going to be more proactive because there's a new arborist, or it's being bantered around again that there are advisories on watering the forest trees, and that just can't be done right now. Third action item would be justifying how does CCWD justify their different tiers? We'll call them and find out if we can, if they can give us that information. And then, we're going to pass out the CCWD invoice to the board, as well as I will personally get asset management plan to everybody again, or at least to Bruce. And I think that's all the new action items.
I believe so. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
The next item is billing dates for 2022.
I'm sure. So the last couple years, we have been billing people six times a year instead of the previous once a year. We've run into a couple, I don't know if I want to call them problems, glitches, bottlenecks, but having the billing go out at the end of the two-month cycle is creating a little bit of a problem for us in the office. So we checked with other utility companies, and we found that most all, if not all, were billing out during the middle of the month, between the 10th and the 15th. That being said, I think we went to try for the 15th, just because we still have an allocated amount of water free that we'll have to figure into this whole thing. Billing out mid-month would give us better cash flow. It's going to stop the bottlenecks that we have at the end of the month in billing, especially if there are holidays towards the end of the month. We would keep the current billing months, so we would keep that as it is. Initially for January and February of 2022, we would, instead of the 700 cubic feet of water that we normally allot to everyone, it would be 525 cubic feet to take up the additional 2 weeks of usage. We'd like to start this, like I said, at the beginning of 2022. We would give the shareholders monthly updates from now, so hopefully by the time we're into this, no one is surprised, although I'd be surprised. Anyway, we just wanted to let the board know that that's what we had in mind.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, so what are the bottlenecks or the issues that the current billing schedule creates?
A lot of it has to do with BDS, the outside service that we're using. The way that they send us the payments is creating havoc when we bill out at the end of a month. It's doable. It just, I figure it could be freed up if we change the billing dates. Specifically, when we bill out in December, that's for November, December, the last of the six invoices. We bill out the last day of December, and we don't see any revenue until the end of January. We feel that if we bill out on the 15th, we would at least get some cash flow in the last 2 weeks of every month, which would help us. It really would. posting of penalties at the end of the month. That's become a problem just because of everything passing in the mail. Basically, it's BDS and the holidays.
Yeah, I think we'll have a huge issue trying to explain to people 525 versus 700.
The January and February bills, I will say, are the lightest bills of the year, normally, usually. So I don't know. We talked it over in the office. We didn't, in looking back at what we've done previously, I don't think we're looking at that much of a problem, but that being said, we haven't implemented this yet.
If it's communicated properly, I don't think it should be a problem.
Well, but it'll also be done at the same time as a potential change in the rate structure. So
yeah.
I guess the question becomes one of, you know, which problem would you rather manage, you know, the communication issue or, you know, the somewhat inconvenience of end of the month billing?
So the new rate structure won't go into effect till they do the mid-February billing, right? And you bill out in February.
January, February, which is when the new rates will go into effect too.
Yeah. Okay.
But I don't see a problem. I mean, I just don't.
So how many people get a letter in the mail?
We still have the majority of our people getting letter. You mean as opposed to getting email?
Yeah, the majority.
I think there's less than 300 that get emails. Isn't that right, Kathy?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So I suggest that when we send out, so at the end of, sometime in December, we normally send out a letter from the treasurer. Sorry, mm-hmm. Bill, I didn't warn you about that.
Yeah, right.
And we send out the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I say I suggest that we include on a different sheet of paper, different color, that we're, you know, the billing will be different for February. And, you know, we explain it there. But we mail that to everybody. It doesn't matter if they get a email that they're not going to open or if they get a hard copy. But I think everybody should get a hard copy.
Okay, I like that. And I think that's a good way to do it as well. We will be using the bubbler. We've got the bubbler for the next 3 or 4 months. We've got Nextdoor that we can send whenever, Constant Contact again, which is our email blast, which we can send whenever. And putting it also as well as on the billing in the important notes.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions regarding this matter? Hopefully we just have 1 month of questions and then it'll go away. So
it takes a while for everybody to get on board with new ideas, but for the most part, the office handles all that very well and very speedily, expeditiously.
Why again are you picking the 15th instead of the 10th?
We could do just because of the 300 cubic feet that's allowed for each month. If we go by the 15th, we can cut that 300 to 150. Makes it easier.
Or 175.
175, sorry.
Well, if you do the 10th, you could just cut it in thirds.
We could. We could definitely do the 10th.
That might give you better.
That means that we're reading around the 7th or 8th to get the bills out on the 10th. So if we do the 15th, we would read around the 10th to get the bills out by the 15th.
Okay. I'm just thinking that the mail service isn't what it used to be. So when you say the 15th, by the time it gets to the customer and then back from the customer, the payment, that's going to take 2 weeks.
We have you're right. We have gone into the 2 week cash flow spread there. Okay, we'll do the 10th.
Okay.
Thank you.
So then the 525 actually becomes 400?
I'll have to figure that out.
Well, I think you have to look at, I think you have to look at when you read for December and then how many days till the 7th and then prorate it.
Well, you're going to end up confusing a lot of people.
Well, I think you just need to make it crystal clear. It's a change in the number. It's a proration. There's actually no impact in your base usage.
Right.
I don't know what else you can do beyond that. Is maybe say it twice. I don't know.
Three or four or five times. Mm-hmm. It's become obvious that people need the repetition.
Right. So the staff will do the calculation of what the usage, the percentage usage will be for that month for February. Okay. So I think we've covered everything on our agenda. Is there anything I'm overlooking? All right. Do we have anything for executive session?
Only if you want to discuss what Mr. Hamilton brought up before we see anything from him.
I think we need a movement to go to executive session.
And I need to give it a little bit of thought first on whether an executive session is authorized for that. You know, we only have limited things that we can go to executive session for. One of them is formation of a contract, but I think we're pretty far out from that even. So I'd be a little cautious here. I'd say this may be something that you want to refer to perhaps the LRPC or just to staff at this point to get a little bit more detail before we're at the point of having an authorized executive session on it.
All right.
You know, I think he agreed to write something down. I'd rather not talk about it unless I have some specific, because he hasn't explained how it benefits our stockholders. He has to put that on paper. So, I mean, it's not, you know, he's just stated what his interest is, but he hasn't really told us anything concrete or to talk about. If he doesn't write anything down, then we don't really have anything to discuss.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think we need to know exactly what he wants to do, because if we want to develop those wells, we need to have access to them to bring in heavy equipment, and then we need to bring in generators if need be. I don't think it's as clean as he thinks it's going to be. So.
Yeah, but it has to be, yeah, and also it has to be in the best interest of the stockholders, or at least in my mind it does. It's not some side deal that we're trying to do. So, I mean, there has to be a reason that our corporation would be interested in it, or our stockholders. I mean, I'm not sure I've heard enough to make that decision one way or the other.
Well, I would argue that, you know, there's a basic simple question, and that is, do we want to give up, control to that property? You know, I don't know why we would, to be quite honest. For all of the reasons you've already brought up, you know, you've got the sewage issue, you've got, land use issues, where's the benefit to the company and to our shareholders? And I don't see one at all. Particularly since we would lose control of the property.
I agree, Andy. I don't see why we would get rid of it unless we needed the money.
Right, but as a good corporate, I mean, I agree that, like, I'm 99% sure I'm going to say no, but we should let him send us his proposal and look at it. That way we're kind of being good citizens, I guess, but.
Or conversely, yeah, we're making them jump through hoops that we already know the answer to.
Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, you can, yeah. Sharon, I guess you can decide if you want to talk to him, but you'd be the only person I think that would be able to, or Andy.
So I think this is probably at the point where the chair wants to give some direction, either kicking it to staff for follow-up, to the LRPC, to a committee of less than a quorum of directors. It's really your option, Sharon, at this point, to still stay legal, to push the issue forward. It just needs to be referred somewhere or dropped, if that's the chair's pleasure.
Well, let me ask this, Andrew. If we drop it, then we can we just let him know that we're not interested? So.
Yeah, there's no official action in saying that, you know, we took no action at the meeting today.
I would hate to have him go through a lot of hoops when we don't see any advantage to ourselves. That's all. You know, for our shareholders and the water company. So I suggest we drop the matter and we just let them know we're not interested.
Yeah, I guess my only answer is appropriate. I'm not sure we're asking him to jump through a lot of hoops. We haven't asked for a 100-page business plan. We've just asked for a written outline of what you intend. So I don't feel bad about asking him to do that.
He also could have gotten an agenda item on today if he had wanted to, and we could have done some preliminary work, but he wanted to appear during public comment. So it's to some extent not the water company's fault that we're still in the initial process here, but you know, it's certainly appropriate to tell him that, you know, we're not interested. It's also appropriate to ask him to follow up with, you know, one of the other bodies that I already listed.
Well, in light of what Bruce says, do we want him to submit something that we can review and then make a better decision? That's open for discussion, or is that open for discussion? I feel like I'm breaking all the rules here, Andrew.
No, you're not breaking any of the rules, because the Open Meeting Act lets you give direction for further discussion on these items. So, you know, you're not breaking any rules by saying if he wants to send us a proposal, then it should be reviewed by staff, the LRPC, you know, a director that you designate. Any of those are appropriate options. You just need to know where to process it. The other option is to just bring it back to the full board in 2 months. But, you know, that's probably not something you want to do, because this is still just really, really early in the proposal stages. And I think it probably needs a little bit more processing before it comes to the board.
So I suggest we ask him to bring something back to Tyler, to the staff, for them to review. Yeah. Or, you know, his proposal of what he wants to do and what we would gain from it.
How it benefits our shareholders would be, he should specifically address that question, would be my recommendation.
Okay.
Got that, Tyler?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else?
Just brief on the topic of watering the trees. The Law just came out in the VIP section. Thomas, I think Hein writes that. He does mention, you know, the issue of, you know, dead trees. And anything, he specifically says it's not all beetles. Some of it's drought related, lack of water. He does two or three and watering trees. So hopefully everybody reads the whole thing. So just be aware of that.
Who was speaking? Oh, that was Craig. Okay, I'll take a look at the lodge log. I haven't read it yet. So thank you. We'll definitely include something in the bubbler about not watering the trees. So, all right.
Put it on our signs.
Right.
Entering the subdivision.
Right. That would be good.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we've covered everything. So we need a motion to adjourn. And I know you all want to stay on Zoom for another.
Right, could we?
Yeah, and I move that we adjourn.
And it was Dan.
Is that Dan?
Yeah.
I'll second.
Who was that? Bruce?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was Bruce.
Thank you. All right, so moved. Thank you so much for attending.
See you in 2 months.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great meeting.
Thank you. Thank you for everyone. Tom. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
You did a great job.
Take care.